In this episode, we speak with an awesome science educator who's teaching kids right across North America, plus across the globe, and she's teaching science using her background in theatre and quality control. This will be interesting.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsom.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed podcast. My name is Ben Newsom, and I'm really glad to have a great friend of mine, Karina Strecker, pop in to talk about all things creative when it comes to STEM with kids. And the reason why I definitely know that she knows what she's talking about when it comes to kids knowing creativity is she works at the Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum. That's up in Michigan, up in the northern part of the USA. And their job, their remit, so to speak, is to work with kids. Period. That's exactly what they do. And Karina does this very well, not just within the museum, but also via video conference across North America. And you'll see what I mean when we jump into this interview, because she has an interesting background. She's worked in theatre, she's worked in planes, and she's worked in quality control. So she certainly brings a lot of interesting skill set to the Hands-On Museum up in Ann Arbor. And I'll tell you what, it was really good having a chat with her. So jump on in. I'm sure you'll love it.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
Hi, Karina. Welcome to the Physics Ed Podcast.
Hi, Ben. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm really happy that you've been able to jump in on this as well. Now, let's do first things first. We missed you in San Antonio.
Oh, my gosh. I was so sad to not be at the ISTE conference this year, for sure.
Yeah, the ISTE conference is a, for those people who may not be aware of it, it's like this massive mega conference for ed tech teachers and consultants and digital education people in some way, shape or form. And there's not a small one. It's like over 25,000 people rock up.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild.
People don't even believe it. When I come back from those conferences and say how many people were at the ISTE conference, they don't even believe that there's like that many people in one space just to talk about technology and education.
Yeah, it blew my mind.
I was very sad.
But it's time for them to go, perhaps.
Right.
But yeah, obviously, full disclosure, I know Karina from a while back. I actually met you back in Atlanta.
Yes.
Oh, gosh, that was about 3 years ago. 2 years ago?
Three or four, yeah. Yeah, but it was even before that when you were just connecting with us during the playground of the conference when you were in Australia at, probably 6 a.m. or something similar to what we're doing here today, and you were talking about your distance learning programs.
Actually, I now remember that. You'd think I'd remember, but I'd actually forgotten. So yeah, you're right. We did a connection by video conference to the floor in the International Society for Technology and Education conference, talking about science education by video conferencing. I think actually it wasn't 6 a.m. It was about 3 a.m. or 2 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
I think and you were dressed like a pirate.
Yes, I was. Our pirate playground, where we kind of allow the people at the conference to get their hands on video conferencing technologies so that they can take them back and use them in their classrooms.
Which is good fun and probably rolls forward to today, actually. So obviously I know you, but there'll be some people who don't know you at this point. So Karina, what do you do?
Okay, well, I am a senior education manager at the Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum, which is a museum in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where we have four floors, over 250 exhibits here at our actual museum location. And so people can come to our museum, learn all about science while playing around with different hands-on exhibits that we have here on the floor. I work in our education department, and I work mainly in our distance learning program. So we connect to schools virtually with video conferencing technologies, and we do hands-on science experiments, one-hour workshops. So we connect to schools for 1 hour, and I basically take over teaching their classroom. So we can do this anywhere. We do this all over the United States. We've been to, I think, 44 of the 50 states. We connect to Canada a lot. We connect to Mexico and, of course, our friends down in Australia. We have made some connections down there as well.
Oh, there you go. And actually, I've seen some photos of you dressed as a witch playing with slime at one point.
Yes, yes. Our Halloween Slime Time is one of our most popular programs. All through the month of October, we only teach our Halloween slime. So we're making slime and talking about the states of matter and different state changes while the students get to make slime on their own. So we send materials to the schools so that they have everything they need for the program itself.
Well, it seems to me if you call it a hands-on museum, they better get to do stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, of course, when we meet with our international classrooms, we have them gather the materials themselves. But for those that are close by, Canada as well, we usually just send them a box of things so that they don't even have to worry about gathering all of those things before the program time.
Actually, so in a lot of ways, what you do is in some ways similar to what Karen Player does from the Australian Museum, who does museum in a box and sends stuff to all these different schools across mainly New South Wales, but certainly to other places as well. The ability to send bits out rather than the teacher having to run around and grab the stuff is kind of nice.
Yeah, absolutely. We do find that teachers like it so much. I mean, they do have, there's a little bit of prep. They have to obviously pass out the materials and different things, but it certainly makes it a whole lot easier when they can open a box, read a few directions, and get their classroom ready. And then, not that the teachers sit back and relax during the one-hour program. There's lots of hands-on activities that we need the teachers to, help the students along. Since we're not in the classroom, we have a different type of classroom management that we have to use. But I am simply in a room, maybe about the size of a closet, and I'm talking to a camera. So I can't help the kids actually mix their slime or, try to balance that paperclip on a cup of water or something like that. But so the teachers are on hand to do that, but they don't have to worry about getting all of those things ready before or gathering them, finding the right materials.
It's a funny thing about people who do a lot of distance learning in their distance learning room. People think it's huge, glorified recording studio. And the reality is that we're in a broom closet often because the audio sounds good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, our studio is a little bit bigger than a closet. I mean, it would be a really nice closet if I had this in my house, but still the equipment doesn't take up a lot of space. Things are pretty small. We don't, do a lot of huge, big interaction things, but everything is pretty much tabletop and our space is quite small. We are, everything that we have that we send out to the schools in the packages, we also have here in this room. So I'm sharing this room with a lot of space, which makes my show space a little bit smaller.
And speaking of which, on camera, I can kind of see that you're sharing it with a skeleton and a lot of blue paint.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So I have Harold, who is my trusty assistant. He is our skeleton who helps us out when we do kind of physical or kinesthetic activities. So we don't just want to the students to be sitting in their seats. We like to get them up and moving. And so maybe I'll use Harold to be my example of a partner if we were both molecules in a solid or a liquid and we just kind of show what those molecules would look like. We do a little molecule dance. So that's what Harold is there to help me out with that. And behind me we have a blue curtain, which we use as a blue screen as opposed to a green screen. I'm not exactly sure why we went with blue. It's really not very efficient with our chroma key because I do tend to wear clothes that are a similar color. So I sometimes blend into the background and I'm just a floating head. But so that's what is behind me in our studio. Pretty small little space here.
Yeah, it's good fun. Now, obviously, you have been doing this all your life. I mean, you've had an interesting and really interesting way into the Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum because... Just describe where you've come from.
Sure. So I went to Bowling Green State University, which is a college in Ohio, so not too far away from here in Ann Arbor. But I studied theater there. So that was my major. I was one of those things where I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I loved doing community theater. I said, okay, this is something that's always going to be a part of my life. I'll major in this and we'll see where that takes me. I didn't want to move to New York and, do some, I wasn't destined for Broadway. I mean, my mom probably thought it was, but I did not think I was. But I knew I would always use those things throughout my life, those different skills that I learned. So after college, I actually became a flight attendant for 2 years. I needed just kind of a break, something fun. I worked for a smaller airline here in the States. They basically went to vacation spots. So I got to hang out in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and Florida, and all of these beautiful vacation spots.
Oh, that's terrible.
And so that was fun.
You can't do that. That's terrible.
Right. I mean, I will say that that was definitely the best customer service experience that you could ever ask for or dream of, because to have to deal with people in a confined space for a very, you know, an extended amount of time and make sure that they're happy and not, you know, throwing a fit or anything. It was a very good experience.
I totally agree. Like, I mean, when I went through university, I had to, like everyone else, work our way through it. And I was in a bar. And so working with, sadly, well, basically drunk people, the least they could get away and I can get away from them. I am amazed the sort of work that people do on airlines, like what you were doing. Is insane. Yeah. I mean, I was just on a flight from Dallas to Australia. We're talking 16-hour flight. I'm amazed that they're somewhat sane by the end of it.
I mean, not many of them are. I was only there for 2 years too, and then I think speaks to that. It's a very intense. It's intensive. It's one of those professions that doesn't get a lot of respect. But then when people kind of think about it, they're like, oh wait, these people are actually doing quite good and work that not a lot of people want to do. So that was a very fun experience. It was a good customer service experience. Had nothing to do with where I ended up.
Ooh,
although
nice.
I do still find that there are times, you know, thinking quickly on your feet and how to make a situation appear better than it actually is. Does come in handy.
Mind you, I kind of think it's almost the same thing in some ways. So you got 30 people traveling from one place to another, in a confined space, or you could have 30 children confined in a small space.
It is very true. I guess I never really thought about it that way. You're absolutely right. I also did find that my theater background definitely helped me out with the airlines as well. I mean, because you had to put on a happy face and just, you know, power through whatever sort of situation it was in, which is certainly something that I find with education as well.
Yeah.
After my time with the airlines, I worked for a public health and safety company here in Ann Arbor that does a lot of testing. I worked in their food safety testing area first, and then I worked in their toy safety department. So they were doing different quality tests and certifications on those. So that kind of gave me a glimpse a little bit into kind of the toy industry and that kind of world. And I made my way here to the museum, though, through my friend Ann Hernandez, who another one of our video conferencing friends that comes to the ISTE conference with us. And she was the distance learning manager here at the museum. And because of my theater background, I knew her through community theater that was how I had met her and how we became friends. And then she said, we've got this position that we needed to be filled, and I think you can kind of do it. And it was one of those things where I didn't have an education background, I didn't have a science background, but they kind of took a risk with me, and it really fit. And so I've been here for about 4.5, almost 5 years.
That brings me right to exactly why I wanted to have a chat with you, because sometimes people think that you have to have a PhD to do this type of thing, that you need some serious background in education and science. And let's be honest, that's going to help. Don't get me wrong here. But there are plenty of science centers and museums, all sorts of types, that bring on artists, these perfectly dynamic people on stage, and they really can hold an audience. You've just got to learn the content. And that's actually what I actually really want to dive into, because gee, your first day must have been, okay, so I've got this background in performance art, and I'm about to talk about molecules.
Right, exactly. I mean, it was a lot. There was a very high learning curve that first year, and it was a lot of watching someone else do the teaching, and I mean, simply repeating the script back. It took me a while to get comfortable going off script or doing things that weren't like, oh, I understand how this happens. But, you know, it's really funny, and I found through the past couple of years, you know, just myself, just personally, like just becoming so much more interested in science and just learning in general, and how much that just being around people who are educators and being around students and people who are learning all of the time, that really it kind of reignites that within yourself. As long as you have a passion for it, it really is going to come. I mean, I liked science when I was in school. It was just not something that I said, oh, that's what I'm going to do when I grow up. I mean, looking back on it, I probably should have studied a little bit more. It probably would have helped me out a little bit more in my current gig, but I don't think I would have done anything differently.
But I think the number of times I've run programs where, and it's not necessarily teachers, but I might have adult learners or in retirement homes or whatever, and they just said at the end of the hour workshop, whatever, saying, look, if I just got to do the stuff that we just did then back in school, I would have been totally different world. My world would have changed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
No, that's awesome.
So absolutely. I find that every day. And so that's what I kind of take into teaching the students, that, you know, whenever I'm connecting with a classroom and they have, you know, time for questions and they ask, are you a scientist? And I'm kind of like, no, I mean, I have a passion for science and it's something that is everywhere. I mean, there is not an aspect of your life that doesn't somehow, you can't somehow relate it back to science. So to me, it should be a passion of everyone's, but it's like, you don't have to go to school to be a chemist in order to have a real love and understanding for how chemistry affects our whole world.
And this is the thing, like, I mean, there's this real push to make sure that the A is in art is included in STEM. You hear this STEAM thing. I mean, mind you, it seems like everyone just wants their own acronym in there. I think this acronym is going to become the alphabet soon enough, but anyway.
I mean, that's exactly, yeah.
But with the arts thing, I mean, the training that you actually get to be able to be not just liberally minded, but be able to make connections that other people may not see means that your presentations and your ability to make people understand logic, it's unique and it's great.
Yeah, it is. And I think it helps to have that creative side, to be able to think of things creatively. But sometimes I do find with our education programs is that sometimes not having the science background is really helpful, in that I have to learn it myself. So it's like, how can I make this relatable just for myself to be able to teach it is really helpful in, okay, how am I going to have students be able to learn about this? Because it's just kind of a process where, okay, if I'm going to be talking about, you know, molecular structure, I'm going to have to learn what that even means to begin with. And in that learning process can come out some really creative ways to teach students.
And there are really creative ways around. I mean, we only just shared a thing on our Facebook page last night where it was a parody. It was a takeoff of one of Ed Sheeran's songs, and it's called The Molecular Shape of You. And there you go. That's something you can go check out on YouTube. But just how people can just creatively change something to try and fit a teaching concept is amazing.
Yeah.
I'd love to know, like, I mean, so obviously you're doing hands-on science programs, and that could be for all sorts of age levels, but what's your main group that comes through the door, or in your case, through your camera?
Yeah, so we, most of our programs that we tend to see, even, so our building, when people come on site, is really kind of for younger students, younger elementary. I would say probably we don't get a lot of kids over the age of 8 or 9. Yep. I mean, they maybe will come with their families, but kind of that's our sweet spot, is kind of preschool and that kind of area. And that kind of tends to go into our distance learning program too. So we have programs, you know, we start off about as young as preschool, and we really cap out about 8th grade. We don't really even tend to do the 5th through 8th grade. We don't do that often, but we do see them on occasion. I would love to have more programs where we're reaching those older audiences, even make high school, but it really, for getting those kind of hands-on, kind of spark their science interest and being able to get those kind of accessible hands-on type activities, the younger ages are really where we can do that best.
So the what's the one that, like, you know how, like, you got several floors in your museum. What's the exhibit that constantly is filled with kids and you have to push them out the door with a broom?
We have our gallery, one gallery that's called H2O, O being O-H-H-H-H-H, it's all about water, and we have we're taking, you know, water tables that you see in a lot of children's museums or science museums where kids can play, but they're kind of taking it to a whole new level. So there's, you know, levers that they can pull and push, and different ways that they can stream the water to, you know, make it do different things and create energy and all sorts of different things. When you get kids in a place where they can make a mess and it's okay, even if it's just water, which is easier on us, but that is definitely one where there is always a lot of noise and a lot of activity in that gallery, whether there's 3 kids or 35 or 90 kids all kind of in that space. So I definitely think it's someplace where they can kind of are free to make a mess and kind of get their hands dirty. I mean, as much as you can get your hands dirty with water, but, you know, where they're actually, you know, getting their hands on to their learning.
No, that's really awesome. So yeah. If you had to, I don't know, you grab those kids, if you somehow were able to wrestle them away from the water play area, you know, throw them a towel or three or five, and you sit them down finally, I mean, what would be like the, like if you got to choose any experiment, any particular science demonstration or whatever, that you thought, you know what, I just want to grab these kids' attention about how the world works on blah, on this thing, what would what would you go to? What would be your go-to thing? What would you love to do?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, there are plenty of things that I would love to do. I think the thing that always kind of surprises me is making slime, which, I mean, I talked about that a little bit earlier, but I mean, that's really, in our distance learning program especially, and even the school groups who come to the museum, people are always booking slime. And I think that every time I do it, I learn something new from the kids about, you know, how they're experiencing it. And it really is just such a all sense, you're using all of your senses. And that's kind of what we teach during our slime program, is it's like, okay, we're making this slime and then we're investigating it. And in our particular program, we're talking about this, we talk about solids, liquids, and gases, and we're asking the students to kind of explore their slime and to try to figure out what state of matter it's in, kind of just leaving it pretty open-ended for them to kind of explore. And it's always so interesting to hear, okay, what, you know, what kind of observations are you having? So younger kids can do this and they can, you know, be smelling it or, you know, putting it up to their ear and seeing if it's making any noise. And they're kind of just getting to that scientific method, you know, while they're having fun, because man, kids are in to slime. And you know, Ben, I would like to think that that is because of us and you yourselves who I know make slime, and you know, these science museums who've been making slime for years, and it really is a big thing now. And I think we should probably take all the credit for that.
Well, why not? We should always take the credit for everything that ever happens in the world.
That's
no, but the slime does grab attention. I mean, I must say that's one of the popular programs that we run, but only by video conference, called Four Slimes in 30 Minutes, and that's exactly what happens. And the kids just have a ball with
it. To make four? Yeah, I am shocked. Four slimes in 30 minutes. That's great.
Yeah, I just rack them up. They do three. I do an extra fourth one just with polyvinyl alcohol and borax solution, just because, hey, that's the one that they may not have on hand.
Right.
What's the other one? So, actually, this actually brings to the point. So we do cornflower slime, but if I tell people in North America cornflower slime, people go, what are you talking about? Maize starch.
Right.
The psyllium husks. Psyllium husks and water, and hot water. It will come out a bit gloopy. And also soap flakes. Soap flakes, simply soap flakes.
Oh.
If you've got soap flakes plus water plus food coloring, it has a slimy feel. And actually, you can talk about surfactants. And I know it seems like, oh, you're just talking about slime. What's that got to do with anything? Turns out that surfactants actually keep you alive with your lungs, because they stop your lungs sticking together when you breathe in and out.
So interesting, right? There's so many things you can tie into slime. I mean, who would think? Who would have thought that?
Actually, yeah, we've been running a lot of distance learning events with a number of museums down in Australia, with Virtual Excursions Australia, where there's a theme, a general theme around a particular program. So it might be pirates or whatever it is. And we certainly know that one that grabs people's attention is Slime Day. And obviously the science centers go, oh, cool, we're doing slime, no problem, that's easy.
Right.
But people got really creative. I know the Australian National Maritime Museum, who's coming on the podcast later on, they did a slime between convicts' toes. And the idea, I know it's a weird thing, they didn't actually make the stuff, that'd be gross, but what they did was talk about the living conditions while they're moving between England and Australia in that big migration that we had. You can really almost twist any topic to fit anything.
You really can. And that's really the cool thing about kind of having the ability to create new programs and to do new things and work with a lot of other museums and that we've actually been able to do. And that it's kind of a cool, the collaboration piece to working in a museum is really becoming a lot easier, especially because of video conferencing technologies and just technology in general. But kind of doing those collaborative things has been something we've really tried to do a lot here.
So now I'm just sort of wondering, you obviously been doing this for a number of years. You go and head off to another museum. Actually, I heard a little birdie told me that you've got a little bit of work here and there around with like other places as well with this. What are you also up to?
Yeah, so we, as a museum, we have actually merged with a local nature center. Mm. So close by the Lesley Science and Nature Center, we've merged our organization. So we're still two different places and we have our normal things we have going on. But education-wise, we're trying to kind of bring it together to be able to reach broader audiences. So they're a nature center. They've actually been doing distance learning with us for longer than I've been here. So we have an owl program where they bring live owls, and we both kind of do the teaching about different adaptations of owls, and then I go through an owl pellet dissection during the actual program itself. So we've kind of always had this distance learning relationship with them. Now we've kind of brought them in to kind of expand that out even more. And we also have a new partnership with, it's called the Yankee Air Museum, and it's an aviation and history museum that's not too far away as well. And they're kind of looking to expand. They didn't have education programs, so they kind of brought in our museum to start to build up an education program, doing the same sort of things, doing distance learning programs, on-site education programs, and outreach as well.
So it comes full circle for you.
It really does. That was kind of the cool thing. And I've taken on the managing of this new partnership. So yes, it was finally that, you know, my time spent in the airlines is going to actually pay off once again. So it
Fantastic.
Definitely came full circle.
You must have walked in with a slight shudder going, oh my gosh, there's the exits forwards, backed and aft.
Exactly. It all came flooding back to me.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, thank you so much for popping on here. I mean, obviously people can get in touch with you, but before we go into your contact details, I'd just love to know if someone had to suddenly step into your shoes, of which now you're involved with three separate museum spots, there's going to be some shoes to fill. I mean, what would be some advice for people who may not have a science background, who really want to jump into a hands-on science museum and just work with kids?
I would say number one, you have to be creative or maybe innovative too, and not just in the types of things that you do, but just kind of in creative thinking. Like, you have to just think outside of the box all the time, and especially thinking, being very flexible and thinking on your feet. So like at times when maybe there's a question that you can't answer, for one, you should always be able to say, I have no idea what the answer is.
Yep.
But also just to be able to think kind of very flexibly in your thinking, and just how can I approach this differently? Or if I don't know this answer, how can I kind of, you know, steer this conversation back to something, you know, that students can get a learning outcome from.
That makes total sense. I mean, obviously any teacher in any classroom knows that they're effectively performance artists in some ways. They're not just educators. They've also got to keep the kids' attention, and that makes total sense.
Exactly.
And thinking on your feet is really just you know, our bread and butter. It's our job all the time. And actually, that just sort of throws up just a question. Has there been a time when you've really had to think on your feet because this thing is just going wrong? This is going pear-shaped. This is not what I wanted to do. Something's going way less than
you
had a time where it's gone wrong.
We have had a lot of those. I mean, just as a museum, we call it the museum switcheroo, where something we've been doing something. We had a program that we were actually doing here on the floor with visitors at the museum, and we had had a complaint from a customer, and our executive director said, you got to scrap it. You got to figure out something else because we can't have this out on the floor. So it just was kind of a collaborative effort. Everybody just kind of came together and said, okay, what else can we do? How can we fill this spot? And, you know, this was maybe 10 minutes before the museum was supposed to open.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, you have to just like, you know, people are running upstairs to get supplies, and other people are, you know, kind of taking the other stuff away. I mean, you just have to really work with what you've got, kind of, again, just be really flexible and ready for anything. So that's kind of, there have been times like that. We also had a camp-in group, a group of Girl Scouts that were coming to do camp-in, so an overnight at the museum, and as they were checking in, we were checking the people in, and the leader of the camp, the group, the scout group said, okay, so we're here to do this lab about the crime lab or something. And we were like, what? No, you're doing the five senses. So we had all these activities ready for them to do something about the five senses. And the group that came in thought they were coming to do something on a crime lab to talk about forensic science. And so the team literally had to think on their feet, swap the things around. I mean, a lot of them were, forensic scientists have to use their senses. And so they really, I mean, within, you know, an hour of having to change, you know, complete curriculum on a 4-hour event, it's real. There have been times where things get very hairy, but you have to just say, okay, if this is what we're doing, we can figure it out. You know, we've got closets of supplies. What can we use? How quick can we change this up? So things have gone quite pear-shaped, as
I tend to agree. I kind of wonder that when on our business cards, it might say education manager or teacher or something. I reckon it also should just say duck that swims on water.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you never can predict what's going to happen, but you should be prepared for literally anything. And sometimes it could be, you know, something very simple, or sometimes you have to just throw the agenda out the window and come up with something on the fly.
Which is like why the learning curve's so high for a brand new person entering education.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Hey, thanks very much. I love that story, because the number of times that we've had to swap and change because a particular thing might have been booked in, but it didn't get passed on to people within a particular department. And all of a sudden we're running, and we do a lot of outreach. So we've driven out to this school. And so the material we got is what we've got. So often we'll have to, you know, turn up again or something like that. It's a rare case, but occasionally wires do get crossed and communication gets missed, and all of a sudden what you thought was booked was not the case. Totally can see it.
Absolutely. As long as you can keep a smile on your face, that'll keep the customers happy and, you know, keep the kids learning, because that's really what we're here for. And as long as they're learning something, in the end, does it really matter?
That's right. As long as you can fit back in the schedule another time. Totally so.
Exactly.
Well, thanks very much, Karina, for popping over. I really am stoked that you're able to top in, especially when you're describing how much busyness you are going on coming to your school camp season. I know there's a lot going on. How can people get in touch with you or the museum? That type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the internet is a great thing. You can come to us. Worldwide audiences can come and see what we do. So we have, our website is aahom.org. So that's Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum.org. And you can / that with distance learning if you want to learn about our distance learning programs. I can personally be emailed at distancelearning@aahom.org. I can also, Karina Strecker, I'm on LinkedIn and all of those regular things. We are on the Hands-On Museum is all over social media as well. So check out what we're doing. It would be great to hear from you.
Totally. So as usual, we'll throw that all in the show notes, and please get in touch with them, especially if you're not just in the Michigan area, but anywhere. There's this thing called the Internet, and the Internet can do things. It can connect people, which is kind of good.
It's really great. And that's the great thing too. I appreciate you for coming in nice, bright and early on that nice Australian morning where it's, you know, time for me to go home.
That's all right. I get to have the first go at the coffee. It's all good.
Awesome.
Well, thanks very much, Karina, again. Much appreciated. And hey, we might catch you perhaps at another ISTE conference soon.
I hope so. Chicago 2018.
Woo!
All right, Ben. Thanks so much.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech, and more. To see 100 fun, free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS. And click 100 free experiments.
And there you go. I really hope you enjoyed the interview with Karina Strecker from Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum. I certainly did. And it was certainly worth getting up nice and early to be able to speak with Karina in her time zone and make sure that she didn't have to work in the middle of the night for her. And look, it was really good fun having a chat with her. And I certainly got a few things out of here. So I really wanted to list a couple of them down. And no doubt you'll have a few yourself as well. So number one for me was, see if you can get yourself involved in the arts. It'll expand your creativity without a doubt. And theatre certainly gives you the presenting skills to be able to hold a class or even a large audience really, really well. And Karina definitely brings that to the Hands-On Museum without a doubt. Number two, and this is a classic one, and I know that most people here would certainly know this without a doubt, but we're going to put it down anyway. It's okay to get messy. It's okay to let kids get hands-on and have a little bit of fun. When it comes down to it, letting kids get their hands busy into some material, whatever it might be, it's about getting them engaged while they're young so that they'll be engaged when they're older. Let's be honest. Yes, we'd love to be able to create a bunch of scientists. Yes, that's, you know, obviously part of being in science education. But having people who are science literate, who actually care to read about what's happening in the scientific community, that's part of our job too. And look, if that means letting kids get a little bit messy, that's totally fine. Hey, just build it into their into the lesson that they've got to clean up afterwards, and that's certainly a good thing. And number three, and this is really just doesn't matter where you are, go to as many conferences as possible. And if you can, if you just can, sneak out to the ISTE conference, the International Society for Technology and Education conference. It's well worth your time. Now, for, I know for a lot of the listeners, it's a bit of a trek. Next year, it is off to Chicago. But I can tell you what, you will learn so much when it comes to working in STEM. It's not just, quote unquote, a technology conference. It is science, technology, engineering, maths, literacy, the works. You've got all these people from librarians to museum educators all talking science and tech and the lot and trying to get the most for their respective audiences and classrooms and all that type of thing. So there are my three top learnings. I'd love to know what yours are next.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed podcast. Love your science? We do too. Here's this episode's education tip of the week. Grab your pencil and get ready to make some notes.
It is time for another Ed Tip of the Week. And before we jump into that, I thought I might mention you would have heard just the slightest of echoes when it came to that interview with Karina Strecker. And the reason why is that we were doing a web conference between Australia and the USA, so between Sydney and Michigan, and there's just the slightest delays is caused simply just sending information halfway around the globe, especially when it came to the audio coming through the speakers on Karina's end. It was just, the sound was just bouncing just a little bit back to the mic, and so you could hear my voice echoing a little bit. So that actually explains what's going on, though I know that our audio guys certainly tried to clean it up a little bit, but it's sort of a little bit unavoidable when you look at post-production when there's a little bit of an audio delay. But hey, we got through it, and I'm sure we're okay. Anyway, we need to talk about what is thinking, what's our thinking this week when it comes to an education tip that you can certainly apply in your classroom or wherever you might be teaching. And in this case, I'd like you to consider, pairing kids and teachers in professional development. This is certainly would grab Karina's attention. I mean, definitely working the hands-on museum. She's very much into kids working wherever they could be. But I tell you what, professional development where students are involved at the same time really, really, really works. Only recently we were doing a TPL session, so teacher professional learning session, with Cornell Park Public School in the southern part of Sydney. And in this case, we were doing Lego robotics with students from a number of schools all in their school hall. And I tell you what, it really, really, really works. The ability to be able to watch students engage with a topic, in this case it was Lego robotics, is fantastic because, rather than just learning the software then having to go back to your school and try and work out how you're going to then teach that software to your student, or it could be a science lesson to those students, being able to get involved with students learning at the same time as you is fantastic because you can really see how the kids are interacting with the lesson itself. So not only about how they're engaging, but what sort of questions are being raised and where are the problems, where are the issues lying, because that means that you can really, really craft a great lesson back in your own school after you've seen students go through the challenges themselves. And having multiple teachers around in a TPL environment like that is great because you can watch each other teach. I mean, how often are we stuck in a classroom by ourselves and we're sort of making the best of it? And yes, we get people come in to help us out and give advice, and there's all these recording things around, and that certainly exists. But when we're all in the same boat and all learning together with students, it's really, really handy to watch how multiple students and teachers work on the same challenge in different ways. Now, let's be honest, working together in a group like that is also cool because you've now got a social opportunity to come up with your own shared challenges, your own shared collaborations. And tell you what, it certainly is awesome. And I must say, after running professional development sessions for many, many, many years with teachers, having students involved as well really, really grab my attention, and so much so you can find a whole blog on that. So jump on our website, you'll see, just in our blog, just type in pairing students or type in TPL on our search box of our website, so physicsfizzicseducation.com.au. You'll find a blog about what we did in that particular session and why it certainly might be worth considering next time you're doing some professional development. So there you go. Pair students with teachers when you're doing some TPL. It's really, really worth your time.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
One of the things that Karina mentioned was the importance of allowing kids to explore and get messy. And there was a past episode, only the last week, where Anne Doran talked about the importance of letting kids do exactly the same thing. Have a listen.
I hate the idea of the old empty vessel. I must fill you up with lots of facts and knowledge. It doesn't work for anyone. And I just see students get so frustrated with that sort of approach because that's not how the better learning is, if you know what I'm trying to say. I mean, everyone needs to talk and explain the project and the process, but there is a time where you actually just need to be quiet and let the students go for it and just be there more as a mentor or the coach and then bring them back in and explain their learning and things. I hate the whole idea of the you must sit and listen to me for 45 minutes and then you have 2 minutes to do your activity and then that's it. I'm not a big believer in that.
Yes, absolutely. Please be a mentor. Please be a coach. Don't just be that sage on the stage who just bangs on and on and on and just no one gets a chance to do anything themselves. No one likes that. I know that eventually you won't like doing that as well because the kids will be turned off, then you get behavior issues and everyone has a bad time. So definitely be that mentor. Allow the kids a chance to explore. And that's exactly what Karina was talking about. This is what Jan Zanitas talked about. This is what Isabel Kingsley and Adam Selinger and all these people who have been on the Physics Ed podcast, there's very much a theme. Let kids explore, and you're there to be their guide.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed podcast. Sign up now for our fortnightly email newsletter. It's loaded with details on new experiments you can do, STEM teaching articles, new gadgets, exclusive offers, and upcoming events. Go to physicseducation.com.au. Scroll to the bottom and add your email.
And that just about brings us to the end of yet another Physics Ed podcast. Hey, jump on our website. There's so much more you can be doing. There are free experiments. There are articles on all sorts of ways of teaching science. There is a mountain of things to do there. And hey, if there's an area that you'd like us to write about, please let us know. Throw us a comment in Facebook, flick us a quick email, do whatever you need to do to get in touch. We'll certainly write it up because, hey, we're getting a lot of fun out of writing it up ourselves. It's really good for sharing information amongst our own staff, let alone sharing it out right across the world, and we're really enjoying it. And hey, if you are enjoying this podcast, please leave a review. It'll let people know that, hey, it might be worth their time, and it'll also give us a bit of a pat on the back, but also, more importantly, let us know what you're liking, and we'll certainly keep on doing that. Hey, next week, Mary Bell drops by. Mary Bell is from the Royal Botanic Garden in Sydney, and she, being part of a botanic garden, loves her plants, and boy, does she love them, and so do I, actually. I have a background in environmental biology and did a lot of work with plant ecology back in my time as a scientist, and Mary very much is a practicing scientist who teaches kids, and I had a lot of fun interviewing her. So yeah, that's next episode. Certainly check that out. And until then, keep on making your science lessons fun. Keep on making them as informative as possible, and make sure that no matter what, you're grabbing your students' imagination. You've been listening to me. My name's Ben Newsom from Physics Education, and of course, you've been listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Bye for now.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book, and more, go to physicseducation.com.au.